It's time to talk sports. It's Hacksaw's Headlines, a panorama of the world of sports, stories, comments, and opinions.
Touchdown, San Diego!
Now, here's iconic sports talk show host Lee Hacksaw Hamilton and co-host John Riley.
Who wants to talk sports? We do. From the Dixie Line Lumber and Home Center Studios in San Diego, while I'm on the road, we welcome you to our Thursday podcast, kicking off a great sports weekend. Brought to you by Dixie Line Lumber and Home Centers, 9 stores in San Diego to serve you, as well as North County Eye Center of Poway and Escondido. We will all need help with our eyes somewhere down road when that time comes. Think North County Eye Center, Poway, Escondido. This is Lee Hacksaw Hamilton. I'm on the road in Virginia, zooming back to left field where John Riley is anchoring our Thursday broadcast. Our broadcast brought to you, of course, by Dixie Line Lumber and North County Eye Center. John, an absolute ton of stories to talk about. We have a 30-minute window today. We won't be able to do fans forum today. We will be back in studio on Monday, and we'll revert back to our regular format. We do invite you, though, if you like what we're doing, check my website, leehacksawhamilton.com. There's an orange box in the upper right-hand corner. Fill that out. Join our Hacksaw's Insiders group. You get all types of emails of different things that we're doing with our podcast as well as our website. John, we've got a ton of topics on the table. Here's the green flag. Go.
Go. Green flag. If we're going to talk about green, we got to talk about the Masters. It's April. Lee, what are you hearing out there in Augusta, Georgia?
John, the Masters is the big story in sports. Rain delay to start on Thursday morning, finally underway. But the big storyline at Augusta, John, has to do with the civil war between LIV, PGA. Most of the star big names are playing under the banner of LIV taking all the Saudi money. There's hardly any recognizable names now from the PGA Tour that are part of the Masters Golf Tournament that you say, wow, they could win. I guess the storyline would be, is Scotty Scheffler going to continue his dominance on the PGA Tour? John Rahm, who took the money and went to Saudi Arabia, is he going to be a big-time player going forward in the Masters? He, of course, now is earning all that money at LIV. The other big storyline is the merger talks are still going on, but, John, they seem to be stalled, and this is a big issue. Nobody's watching the LIV on TV here in the States. They're playing in all these different countries and a few tournaments on the Trump courses in the U.S. They're virtually being ignored despite having all the stars, and the TV ratings for the PGA have plunged. Besides outside of Scotty Scheffler and Xander Schauffele, there's not a lot of recognizable names on the PGA Tour, so therefore people aren't paying as close attention as they used to. And they're still arguing about things like the world golf rankings. LIV players are not ranked because World Golf does not recognize their team format. The team format versus medal play has continued to be an arguing point in the merger talks. You add into the equation that there's a certain segment of the guys on the PGA Tour want penalties sanctioned against Dustin Johnson and Phil Mickelson and Koepka and Rahm for violating their tour card and taking the big money in Saudi Arabia. They don't want those guys back unless they pay a penalty fee to get back in. This is so complicated. And it's also fueled by the argument that LIV wants to continue team play. The PGA people says nobody pays any attention to team play. They want to see medal play. This is so complicated. So that's the atmosphere, in addition to the rain at Augusta, that we're dealing with. There's so many differences and obviously still a significant amount of ill will. Rory McIlroy has changed his opinion. He wants everybody together, but their guys on the PGA Tour, Scotty Scheffler one, says no. We're not going to let them back in as if they did nothing to our tour because they've really damaged the PGA. So this is where the Masters is teed off, and it's like a dog with cans tied to its tail running down the street making all the noise. All these topics are tied to the golf bags of the guys that are playing at the Masters this week, and there seems to be no solution. It's already April. They've gone by 2 deadlines. They thought they'd have the merger talks done. This is not good for golf. This will be a great weekend for golf because all the names are there playing, but this is not good for golf. John?
Well, it's funny that Scotty Scheffler is upset. You know, of course he doesn't want to see all those big names rolling in and competing with him. He's got him and Xander and a bunch of minor leaguers, and he likes that. This is such a blown opportunity because there have been so many different eras of golden ages in golf. You know, even just going back to the Tiger and Phil, but we can go back to Jack Nicklaus and all the superstars throughout the years. And even when it wasn't super duper stars, it was still a great tournament, a great tour. What the hell is going on? These guys are killing their own golden goose.
Well, the Saudi money, the blood money. That's the big difference in the equation, because they have all the stars and nobody is paying attention to them. They're off the radar of the golf fans here in America. And what's left behind are a couple of real established guys who stayed loyal to this tour and an awful lot of young bucks that are trying to make a name but don't have much identity. That's where it is as they tee off at the Masters at Augusta. We'll continue to follow the story as we go through, but there's as much news off the course as there is tee to green at Augusta. John, let's go flashback March Madness.
March Madness is, I mean, yeah, it's in the rearview mirror now. There's no college basketball until when? November? But boy, it's been a great run, hasn't it, Lee?
Historical. That's the word being used by a lot of people about what we just saw on the Final Four weekend, but obviously with the 17 upsets in the tournament leading in the first 3 weeks. Scoreboard does not lie. This, I don't know if this is a one-time occurrence. The women outdrew the men in the TV rankings.
Awesome.
Figure that out. 18.9 million saw the championship game between South Carolina's Lady Gamecocks and Caitlin Clark's Iowa Hawkeyes. 18.9 million. The men's game, which had a lot of storylines going into it, they drew 14.8 million. So women's basketball, for the first time, it was a novelty. I think everybody who liked basketball wanted to see it. I don't know if they're all hardcore women basketball fans, but they went and they viewed what we thought was spectacular. Just so many cool things. Dan Hurley stood up at the parade in Storrs, Connecticut, and said, "We are now officially a dynasty. UConn has won 6 NCAA titles, a bunch of them lately." Staley, the coach at South Carolina, very strong in her opinion about where women's basketball has come from. She also made a bold comment at their celebration. She's of the opinion that transgender athletes should be allowed to play women's collegiate sports. Wow. That's going to open up a can of worms, and that's something that we can probably debate a little bit farther down the road. Gino Auriemma at UConn, gracious in UConn's loss. He just praised Caitlin Clark for everything she did, how mentally tough she was, how she shouldered the load to amplify the greatness of women's college basketball, and says he's looking forward to her doing the same thing in the WNBA with all the other stars that are going in to the draft. And one of the great coaches of all time in women's basketball just announced her retirement, Tara Vanderveer, Stanford. Phenomenal career, 38 years with the Lady Cardinal, over 1,201 wins. She just announced her retirement. And then, of course, there's one sidebar story, the coaching carousel going out of control completely. John Calipari was told that we don't think he should remain as coach. There was a $33 million buyout, and Kentucky could not afford that. But they indicated to him, you are free to look. He looked across the state line, went to Arkansas almost immediately. And how badly did they want him? He negotiated a different type of contract at Arkansas. He went back to Kentucky and said, I'll stay here if you'll match the offer. And Kentucky said, no, you've made your decision. You can leave. So now Kentucky's searching for a coach. Calipari was asked to vacate. So just an amazing week of basketball capping off an amazing month, March Madness.
Yeah, I think the viewership is outstanding. I mean, the NFL, though, is still like three times the amount of viewers, isn't it? I mean, that's just the elephant in the room. Yeah.
But women's basketball, John, went from 4 million viewers to 18.9 viewers. The snap of the fingers.
That's so awesome. You know, it's like women's soccer. You know, it's you see a lot of young girls there with their moms and their aunts, and they've got a sport to rally around. So I think this has legs as far as, you know, it's not a one-time thing with ratings for the women's basketball. The men enjoy it. I mean, Shaquille O'Neal was on King Charles with, you know, Barkley and Gail King and saying, I like the women tournament more than the men's tournament. It was more entertaining. But going back to Coach Gino over there at UConn, did you see that video clip right after Gabby Marshall got, you know, picked by that moving screen that was so controversial at the end? And you could see Coach Gino just like you know, upset. And then right behind him was Gabby Marshall with her arms in the air, celebrating to her fans in the stands. And it was a perfect juxtaposition of the emotion of that game. So this is a spectacular run for the women. I hope they keep going. And let's not stop at basketball. Let's get women's tennis and all the other sports. Let's get them going.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. And because they've got great coaches and the exposure has been spectacular. This is, John, this is all the end result of decades and decades ago of the implication of Title IX. Title IX arrived. We saw it with what women's basketball has become. It was just fabulous going forward. Now, all those stars are going to the WNBA draft in a couple of weeks, and they'll move to the pro level, and maybe that'll have an impact in terms of attendance lots of places in the WNBA. We get to halftime. Our podcast is brought to you by Dixie Line Lumber and Home Center Stores, 9 locations to serve you in San Diego. John, you have projects in your house. I've done projects in my house, and Dixie Line Lumber, the people we went to.
Yeah, I mean, one of the great things that they do is decking products, you know, for like a wood deck in your patio. But a lot of it, they have these composite decking, like from companies like TimberTech, and this composite decking actually, it resists the sun and the wind, and it can last far longer than a lot of wooden decks. You see a lot of really nice homes in San Diego, and it's because of Dixie Line Lumber and the composite decking that they offer.
Projects home, projects patio, projects yard, projects business. Think these people, Dixie Line Lumber. And our podcast brought to you by North County Eye Center of Poway and Escondido. From vision tests to glasses to contact lenses to more significant things like glaucoma as well as cataracts. When you need help with your eyes, these are the people to deal with. I did. They've been in business since the 1970s, serving people in North County. North County Eye Center, the people you should call. North County Eye Center, Poway, Escondido. We start the second half of our podcast Thursday, Hacksaw, great sports weekend. We won't be able to do fans forum today because we're on the road, but we will be back to our regular format on Monday. John, we got late breaking stories everywhere. Let's start with one that just broke involving the Dodgers.
The Dodgers. Ohtani, are we learning more about this situation with the money?
Yeah, there's numerous reports that have just filtered out here on the East Coast that Ohtani's personal aide, IP Musikala, is going to plead guilty. But evidently, the depths of the investigation have now uncovered a lot more damaging evidence involving what that personal aide did with Ohtani. Ohtani, it has now been confirmed, had absolutely no idea what was happening. And what they're saying is that Mizuhara not only had access to his accounts because he would pay his bills and do all that, he changed coding on the accounts so that the large withdrawals were never recognized by Ohtani nor Ohtani's lawyers. In other words, he rigged the system that he could withdraw $500,000 9 different times with Ohtani getting no knowledge at all. Now there's investigations. Not only did he do that, he may have accessed some of other Ohtani accounts and removed money. They're now saying the $4.5 million might be the base figure, but they're investigating even more money that may have been taken. And they're also investigating whether or not Mizuhara was betting on sporting events in Japan using Ohtani money, in addition to what he was doing with the Orange County illegal bookmaker. This has unbelievable implications. The IRS is involved. Homeland Security is now involved, and the U.S. Attorney General's office is now involved because this has now become possibly an international crime. And at the end of the day, it looks as if Ohtani was victim, was not involved whatsoever, and had no knowledge because of the information now that Mizuhara changed access coding so that Ohtani and his lawyers would never, ever get notification of the large amounts of money that were transferred. Story's not complete, but it looks like Ohtani is cleared of any wrongdoing. John?
Do you believe that story? I mean, I think it seems like a cover-up to protect the biggest superstar in the sport.
Well, it's coming from government officials. I mean, these are, quote, these sources in the midst of this probe. So I would have to believe it. It's just been reported by the New York Times and the Associated Press. So going forward, I don't think it can't be a cover-up. Baseball would never allow a cover-up. because the integrity of the game would really, really be at risk. But the more they've delved, the more they found this guy was involved in a lot of other stuff. He is in significant trouble. Now he seems to be in significant international trouble.
Wow.
So we got, that's the latest on the Ohtani situation. And back at home, while I've been on the road in the state of Virginia in the Old Dominion, your Padres, some days good, some days bad.
Yeah, exactly. And yesterday was a good day. I mean, they won 2 out of 3 against Chicago. Can they keep it going, Lee?
Day off today, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Dodger Stadium.
Uh-oh.
You answer that question? here's the issue. They are hot. They are cold. Dylan Cease looked like vintage Dylan Cease in the final win over the Cubs. Dylan Cease, 6 innings, 2 runs, couple of hits, really strong. Big concern about where Darvish is. Bigger concern, Musgrove does not look like vintage Joe Musgrove at all. That's got to be a concern for the Padres right now. Yu Darvish in his last 18 innings has given up 9 earned runs. That's a little bit more than the norm for him. Musgrove, 18 innings, 14 runs allowed, walks, bases on balls, and home runs. Joe does not look like Joe at this point. Manny Machado, really slow out of the gate. He maintains there's nothing wrong with the elbow. Now, he did hit really well in spring training, hit over 300. I thought if there was going to be a setback, a flare-up, it'd show in spring training when he was DHing all the time, and it didn't. He hit over 300. He's hitting 204 with the Padres right now, so there's got to be a little bit of concern there, and evidently he's still back a ways from being able to play third base. His throwing has been very limited. They had one flare-up in the spring that shut him down. He's not ready to go become the Padres' third baseman. Kim, another error. Kim struggling a little bit at home plate, hitting over 200. I'm just wondering if the fact that this is his free agent season, contract comes up next year, maybe he's putting an inordinate amount of pressure on himself, and maybe that's kind of impacted his game a little bit. So, you know, the Padres have got some issues. They're still hot. They're still cold. Now they're moving into the teeth of the schedule because you're not playing the Giants anymore. You're going to wind up playing, you know, starting the Dodgers, and then they got Atlanta, et cetera. So the schedule gets a little bit more grittier as we go forward. And John Riley says,
I'm not worried about Manny because he's still hitting the ball hard, you know. And don't you love seeing all these other guys at the bottom of the order being super productive? Campusano, Profar, oh my God, Profar is like hitting like Juan Soto right now. Unbelievable. But going back to Ha-Seong Kim, what do you think is going on in Xander Bogaert's mind? Saying, hey, man, I was the shortstop, and now this guy's making all the errors.
Well, he's a good team guy. I don't think he's going to bark about it. But I could so foresee if this thing continues with Kim at shortstop, maybe they just flip-flop him back and put Kim back at second base, put Bogaerts back at short. Although the general consensus is Kim is a gold glove shortstop, but he's not playing that way this year. I was just thinking off the top of my head is maybe he's just pressing way too much because this is the final year of his contract and there could be a good payday out there for him. If not in San Diego, then we're somewhere else. And I mean, he doesn't look like the same player in terms of rhythm, flow, ease, making all the plays. Just to look at least the first 3 weeks of the season. Long baseball season, maybe he'll settle down.
Well, let's just hypothetically say that Machado has some setbacks. He can't play in the field at all this year. Do you see a situation where Kim can move to third base, Xander to short, maybe put Cronenworth at second, and then have a different guy play first?
Well, you got Tyler Wade, who can be a utility guy. Maybe he's going to be the third baseman if Manny just has to continue to be the DH. That's too many moving parts. You can't make that many changes. That would impact too many things. I think if the struggles defensively, the weird throws, the mishandled glove plays, if they continue, first item might be we'll just flip Ha-Seong Kim back with Xander and just go on. Wade will continue to play a chunk of third base. They did send Graham Pauley down because they want Pauley to get a lot more innings and at-bats in the minor leagues rather than sit here and be an occasional third baseman. So that move was made, I guess, before the final Cubs game on the schedule. So that's where we are with the Padres situation. Baseball's got a real crisis on its hands, John. Just give us the thumbnail headline there.
Yeah. I mean, the pandemic, pitching injuries, I mean, it's really bad. Did you see the interview with Justin Verlander?
Yes. The history is there have been more pitching breakdowns in the first month of this season in spring training than in any year prior. There are now 10 major league pitchers within a month have had to have elbow surgery. There are 22 total minor league pitchers, major league pitchers that who were in camps had to have surgeries. Major League Baseball is trying to put together a comprehensive medical study. They want the Players Association to join them and sign off on it to get the data why this is happening. Justin Verlander has spoken about it. John Smoltz, who does the games on TBS, the great pitcher, he has just spoken about it. The union is saying something that makes no sense at all. The pitchers and the club officials are really concerned. Everybody is seeking velocity. Everybody wants 100-mile-an-hour arms. And because of the velocity and the enormous pressure they're putting on shoulders and ligaments, and because of the adaption of the sweeper, which is a really hard slider curve, the wear and tear factor on the ligaments and the elbow, these ligaments are exploding. Smoltz and Verlander said, this is all based on everybody wants 100-mile-an-hour arms, and every pitcher is trying to get the big payday, so he's going to go to deliveries that are going to cause these kind of damages. It's a huge issue. I did some research here as part of the survey, Major League survey in 2023, just last season, John, 35% of all pitchers on Major League rosters, 35% had already had this surgery. Whoa. In 2024, as I just alluded to, we got all these pitchers who are broken down at the Major League level and hot prospects that were in camps are broken down. In a category of fastballs, 15 years ago, the top fastballs in the major leagues averaged 90. Today, top fastballs average 94. 100-mile-an-hour pitchers in 2015, there were only 31 guys that clocked 100 miles an hour. This year, there's 64 already that have clocked over 100. So I tend to believe totally what Smoltz and Verlander are saying, that the pitchers are seeking velocity so they can have big paydays, and the pitchers are trying to develop the violent action on slurves, et cetera, because that'll make them more dominating. And the end result that you and I have talked about, the shoulders and the elbow ligaments can't hold up to that wear and tear. The union is standing across the street saying, it's the pitch clock, your pitch clock, forcing these guys to go max effort every 18 seconds has caused all this. And the MLB and the MLB team doctors and John Smoltz say, no, not at all. It's got nothing to do with 18 seconds between pitches compared to 20 seconds between pitches. Tony Clark's pissed off because they did not have veto power on rule changes. And now he's trying to use all this as a shield. At the end of the day, it's velocity and it's the sweeper. And I don't know how you can outlaw that except the pitchers in their heart and their heads, John, I'm of the opinion, have to decide I'm not going to adopt those pitches because it'll hurt my career, might end my career.
Wow.
Your response.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot going on here. The pitch clock, I mean, that doesn't make any sense, but I hear people talking about that as part of the problem. Don't you remember back, like, I don't know, when I was a kid, no one threw 100 miles an hour. I mean, maybe Nolan Ryan.
With the exception of Nolan Ryan.
Yeah. And they had those old jugs guns out there behind the plate. And it was rare to hear. I mean, when they said 100 miles an hour, everyone's like, you know, oh, my God. And now it happens all the time. I mean, it wasn't that long ago, was it? Maybe 15 years ago that Aroldis Chapman was at Petco and he was hitting 104, 105, 106. And the crowd was going crazy. Yeah, things have really, really changed. But you know, back in the day, how long did Nolan Ryan pitch? He had a long career, a reasonably healthy career. And now these guys could be blown out and be done in a couple of years.
Yeah. You look at the Atlanta Braves, the big three, you know, John Smoltz, Tom Glavine, and Craig Maddux. The number of starts they made, the number of innings they pitched. And Smoltz was the only one, because he was a hard thrower. He had velocity. He was the only one that had arm problems. But those guys weren't throwing these types of pitches where everybody mm-hmm. wants 100 miles an hour and everybody wants this wicked stuff that breaks. I don't know how baseball's going to – they can't outlaw it. It has to come from the pitchers. Decisions that I'm not going to try to do that because it will damage my career, shorten my career, might even end my career. And who wants to sit out 16 months, lose that segment of the middle of your career to rehab from this type of surgery? It's a monster, monster big story. So we got baseball covered. John, let's go to football.
Football. I mean, yeah, the NFL Liars Club. Well, you got some trade rumors going on here, Lee.
Yeah. The month of April is Liars Club around the National Football League. Smoke screens. Everybody's doing this, and they're not doing that. They're hiding behind the smoke screens code and go do that. Let's just run down quickly some storylines here. Jim Harbaugh. I mean, every time he talks, it's like he's preaching. It's like a tent revival. Jim Harbaugh has just finished up his first week of OTA workouts because new coaching staffs get to start a week ahead of everybody else to get acclimated to their rosters, etc. Jim Harbaugh says, if the top four picks are quarterbacks in the NFL and we draft five, it's like we have the number one pick. Tell everybody the Chargers have the number one pick because the quarterbacks will be off the board. They'll have their selection of anybody, wide receivers, offensive tackles, defensive linemen, whatever. So that's funny because Harbaugh is just preaching to the choir. Put the spotlight on the Chargers because the Chargers are going to have the number one pick because the quarterbacks will be gone. We'll have the pick of anybody else on the planet. He's amazing. This is the latest. Chicago obviously is locked in on Caleb Williams from USC. Washington is meeting for a second time with Drake May, North Carolina. New England has a meeting with Jaden Daniels from LSU. The thing that could flip everything is what's going to happen at Arizona number four. The rumor is they're going to trade out. The rumor is Minnesota's got 11-23, and the Vikings would trade 11-23 and maybe something else to get Arizona's fourth pick, and they would take J.J. McCarthy. So you'd have four quarterbacks gone right at the top of the board. Then the Chargers sit there, and they might have the, quote, number one pick overall, according to his honor, Harbaugh. But would they keep it? Would they take a wide receiver? And there's good ones. Would they take offensive tackles, the best that they need? Or would they trade back? Would other people try to jump in and take a wide receiver, let the Chargers go back a couple slots and still get one of the marquee guys? The New York Giants are at number six. They could jump up. I don't know how they'd get into the quarterback derby because the Arizona pick might be going to Minnesota. I don't know how much the Giants have got capital-wise they could give to Arizona, except that Arizona would only go from four to six if they traded with the Giants, let the Giants get a quarterback, rather than trading down to 11-23 to get the Minnesota pick. So the Giants are in play. And the other storyline has to do with Michael Penix. He's hot. He's had good workouts. So you got Minnesota 11 if they don't trade, Denver 12, Raiders 13. Raiders don't have the assets to jump way up. So suddenly Michael Penix becomes the middle of a tug of war with maybe Minnesota, definitely Denver, and the Raiders. Fascinating. And I've had to sift through all this smoke and haze because the Liars Club is at full efficiency right now. Everybody's dropping hints and everybody's lying to the media.
Yeah, this is a great time of the year, right? Very entertaining. But, you know, Harbaugh's line, his pitch, that's a good line. That's a good PR line because they will have the pick of whatever they want because they obviously don't need a quarterback. So that makes a lot of sense to me. When's the draft coming, Lee?
The end of April. I think it's April 27th, 28th, 29th, 3 days.
Yeah, so that's like 2.5 weeks or something like that?
So we'll be zeroing in when we get back in studio on Monday. We'll be zeroing in. Hey, one other football note. This story has just broken. O.J. Simpson has passed away. The electric company running back with the Buffalo Bills, whose great NFL career was then, how could I say this politely, was then destroyed by what he got himself involved in with the terrible death of his wife and everything that happened. He had really disappeared from public view in the last 6 months. And normally when that happens, you think there's something physically that has happened. He lost a battle to cancer at age 76. So when I step away and I close my eyes, I see O.J. Simpson and the electric company running the football for 2,000 yards in Buffalo. Mm-hmm. And I see O.J. Simpson in the TV commercial running through the airport for the car rental firm. And I remember O.J. Simpson working Monday Night Football, didn't think he was very good whatsoever. And of course, we obviously remember O.J. Simpson back in the day with John McKay's great USC Trojans team. But his life really evolved into a horrific tragedy over the deaths, the lawsuits. Was he guilty? The trial, which I think forever stained his reputation. He was toxic from that point on, and he just really kind of disappeared from life. And the last time you saw him, he was selling memorabilia at an airport or something. It was just a terrible, terrible way to end what had been a brilliant, brilliant career. I don't know that we'll ever know the outcome who was to cause the death of his wife, but and that other man. But it was just terrible end to what could have been a phenomenal life.
Yeah, I mean, a really sad story. I mean, I just remember when he came to the 49ers back in the 70s. And that was like a big deal here and there in San Francisco. But yeah, it's just tragedy. I mean, the 90s was a weird time, wasn't it? We had the whole OJ trial, which captured the imagination of America. I remember the company I was working for, they brought in a television when they were announcing the final verdict. And he had Rodney King there and all this stuff going on. It was a crazy time in the 90s. But you know what? Since, you know, all the dust sort of kind of settled on the legal issues, I followed him on Twitter, OJ, and he was a very entertaining. You always talk about his fantasy football teams and stuff. But wow, what an end to a crazy career, a crazy life.
Yeah. The big phrase. What was it the lawyer said? If the glove doesn't fit,
you must have quit. Yeah.
Judge Ito and all the other people, and that trial went on and on and on, because mm-hmm. that might be superseded by the trials we might see on TV with the former president shortly. But to me, it's sad. I mean, that was greatness as a football player. That was greatness as a personality, and his life just totally unraveled at the end. O.J. Simpson has passed away in a fight with cancer over a short period of time. At the age of 76, he had been living almost in exile, had been living in Las Vegas. Hey, we hope you have enjoyed our Thursday podcast. We'll be back in our studio on Monday. We'll be able to reopen our fans forum part of the podcast. Always a ton of topics on the table. John, have yourself a great sports weekend. Take a deep breath, because Monday, pal, we start to zero in more specifically on the NFL draft.
Yeah, and we could talk Padre Dodgers, which is going to be a great series this weekend.
Have yourself a great sports weekend. Our podcast brought to you by Dixon Line Lumber and Home Center Stores, 9 locations to serve you across San Diego County, and by North County Eye Center of Poway and Escondido. When you need help with your eyes, I recommend North County Eye Center. John, have a great sports weekend. We'll catch up to you when we get back in town on Monday.
Okay, safe travels, Lee.
And have a great sports weekend. Thanks for joining us on Hacksaw's Headlines.
Join us again for Hacksaw's Headlines on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. And find the audio version on your favorite podcast app.
Touchdown, San Diego!
For more content, go to LeeHacksawHamilton.com.